Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you with the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Lori Battaglia, CEO of Aligned at Work. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Mike Bays, Manager of HR Services for Insperity. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Mike, why don't you start off our conversation by really creating some context for us? We're going to be talking about people and the way people work, but get us into that with a brief introduction to Insperity. What does your organization do? Who do you serve?
Okay, thank you. Our organization serves small businesses anywhere from, you know, 5 employees and up. Our goal is to partner with small businesses to help them focus on their business, and we will focus on their employees and support them with payroll benefits, again, strategic HR services and the like.
And Insperity is very well known in HR circles. The company's been around 33 years. You've got 76 offices throughout the United States, supporting more than 100,000 businesses and over 2 million employees. So you've got a significant footprint and a deep insight into what's going on in the world of work. What are the key issues that you see, and what sorts of solutions are you providing leaders in these organizations and companies?
We have a wide array of solutions. One thing that we're seeing today is employers having a difficult time finding, recruiting and attracting and retaining talent. So we offer solutions for them, and we can get into the details of how we do that and the mechanics of it, if you'd like. Our CEO, Paul Sarvadi, just released a book. It's called Take Care of Your People. It's published by Forbes. And in that book, he talks about how a client or an employer's brand is interconnected with their recruiting capabilities. So when employers go out and look for talent, they want to establish their brand in their culture first, develop a sound job description for the role that they're looking for. And what we've found is the employee of today is looking to social media for that employer's social media footprint. And they look on Glassdoor, LinkedIn, et cetera. And if you've built a positive brand for your organization, you're more than likely going to be able to attract people that are like-minded in terms of their values, the values that they seek from an employer.
You know, a few years ago, I was giving a talk at an association here that is an association of community health centers. So Arizona has a lot of rural areas, and some of the larger organizations, healthcare organizations, also have remote clinics serving those areas. And a key issue there was recruiting and retaining doctors and health providers to go out and live and work in these areas. That's an extreme case.
Yes.
Where really communicating the values and the mission and the culture of that clinic or that medical group is important. They also had a CARET, which is loan forgiveness programs for medical students who would then go serve there. But that's an extreme case that actually communicates something that's much more common, which is if people can't align themselves with what they see in your organization, they've got options. And
yes,
especially in certain professions, they could take their talent a lot of places. How do you tackle that in the recruiting process?
Well, you're right. They can take their talent anywhere they want. And sometimes employees will, you know, they'll offer or they'll get an offer for a rich financial package. Problem with that is that there's always somebody else willing to come along and offer a more rich financial package. So what keeps them connected is their sense of belonging with that organization. If that organization aligns with their values and their belief system, it's more than likely you'll be able to keep them. However, there are more things that you need to do besides that. For example, you want to make sure that they have an opportunity to grow and that they have an opportunity to advance their skill set and make they want to feel more important to the organization and more empowered to do the things that they know are right for the clients that they serve.
When Dan Pink came out with his book Drive a number of years ago, really hammering home what the social science research has been saying for years, is that monetary incentives are not the only drivers of decision making. In fact, may not be the best ones.
Right.
Right. So that sense of autonomy and mastery that you were just speaking about, the ability to operate and feel in control of some of their decisions and their ability to progressively get better at skills that are important to them, are two of the three that he talks about in that book. Let's talk about your personal journey for a second. That's a great bridge to the question of why is this human being, Mike Bays, in the seat he's in on this bus today? How did you get started in the world, or where was your starting point? I don't want to presume to know what it is. How did you get into this?
Well, I started in human resources back in the mid-90s. I decided to go to school and get a degree in HR. I was working full-time for an underground mining company in southern Illinois. And they offered a tuition reimbursement plan. So I took advantage of that. I got my degree in HR. I was able to move into the open pit mining field in Arizona. And back then, HR and safety were combined into one role. So I had experience in safety, a degree in HR, so it was a pretty good fit. And over the years, and you know how mining is, it's you move from one mining camp to the other, and just got tired of that and decided to look for another opportunity in the valley. And I saw Insperity's ad for my position. I applied. The folks that I interviewed with were amazing, and what I saw was a perfect culture fit for me and the things that I believe in and my values. And since that was one of the best decisions I've ever made, and I get the opportunity to work with hundreds of clients in the region and help small businesses grow and prosper, and in that they help their communities prosper.
You touched on something that's very important, and that is safety. And there's lots of other ways in which concerns about safety and you know, protecting people, protecting a very protectionist kind of view of things. Protecting people or protecting paperclips, you know, trying to make sure that things don't get slippery. And at the same time, a lot of the conversation around people development has shifted away from the rules and the policies and trying to create cultures with you know, the employee handbook and the consequences of infractions. That's one way to do it. And another way to do it is really to develop people's connection to the place where they work and to feel some ownership of their role. Insperity's team of experts in so many different fields touches so many different businesses. What's the current state of conversations about culture in the workplace as you see them through your lens?
What we know is that if an employer doesn't have an idea what they want their culture to look like, and they don't pay any attention to it, it'll form by itself, and we call that culture by default. What we focus on is culture by design. And what we want to do is we want to hear from the employees. We want to know what they think, what gets them up in the morning, and what they lose sleep over at night. And we take that information and we use it to make real change and positive change in the workplace. We've done culture surveys within our organization. We provide that service to our clients so they can help build their culture. And what we've done, Adrian, is we've the success of Insperity over 33 years of successful supporting of small businesses, we've taken that model and we've offered it to our clients. So we model our services that we offer our clients out of what the success that we've developed within Insperity, and it works.
That's a really great point. With such a large footprint, you've got a lot of people working right for your company,
yes,
and you really need to lead by example. If Insperity is not a great place to work and providing great benefits and nurturing its leaders and providing autonomy and mastery and all right the things we talked about, then it's pretty hard to deliver on that for clients, what are some of the initiatives internally that you have either heard about or been a part of that are a great example of what makes Insperity a great place to work?
Wow, there's so many. Some of the key ones are setting our organization up to be able to be closer to the front lines, our services close to the front lines of our clients, so we get to know our clients really well. So we have several offices in this region. I'll just talk about this region for now. And we have service providers and business performance advisors in each of those cities. And we'll go out and talk to business owners and talk to them about what we do and what our belief system, what our goals and objectives are as an organization, and how do we match up with you and the needs that you have. So, you know, we're able to meet those business owners where they are, understand their concerns, what keeps them up at night, and provide a solution for them. So we have sales offices in every major city in the West and service providers in each of those offices. And they're highly trained and they understand business. They have strong business acumen. They also have a good set of values of themselves. And, you know, our goal is to attract that business owner that wants to get better.
Let's circle back to you in a few minutes, Mike, and explore some more of this dynamic. I mean, I'm interested to learn on that meta level how Insperity recruits and retains top talent. But I'd like to turn for a minute to Lori Battaglia, at somewhat the other end of the spectrum, from a large organization providing HR and people services to a very specialized boutique agency. Lori, tell us about Aligned at Work. How do you serve folks and what kinds of offerings are you bringing to the world?
Well, we like to say that we help people to solve the people problems before they become profit problems, because they generally go that way. And we find that a lot of people, a lot of companies that come to us are promoting from within. As I got promoted from within and as I believe in, I'm a both and person. So I think you should promote from within and then occasionally bring in people for new blood and new ideas. But when you do that, usually the person is coming out of an individual contributor role where they were really good at what they did. They may or may not have leadership skills, and they certainly don't know exactly what they're doing. So we oftentimes get called in when people realize that they're at that point where they need a formal leadership program. They want it to look like their culture. Like Mike said, culture is important, and it's going to come about whether you are intentional about it or not. So let's be intentional about it. And I believe that a lot of times the training that we provide helps solidify the culture, because one company's training needs to look different from another company's training. And that's our main offering. We also do strategic planning. We do team events. We do coaching of all sorts. So there's a lot in there, but we lead with that leadership training.
And Aligned at Work is not just the name of your company. It's the name of the system and that you've developed,
right,
a framework for really getting at these things. What is the Aligned at Work model?
The model came from something that a coach I once worked with called a divine download, when all of a sudden you just sort of say, oh, that's how I put some structure around this stuff that's been happening. So for a long time, I've worked with training leaders within large corporations and small ones, actually 20 years of small ones and almost 20 years of large ones. And I started to notice some things that people were looking for. They were looking for purpose and authenticity and a life outside of work and some of these things that they all had in common. And the model itself brings together five elements of vocation. Are you doing the right work for you? And do you sync up with your company? Relationships, do you have a good support system around you? And do you know how to be that support system for other people as well? Finances. My background is all in banking and finance. And so I believe that in order to really thrive, you need to have the right mindset and the right practical skills around finances so that you can build the life that you want. And the last two are well-being and spirit. Well-being is really about being happy, healthy, and successful. And I think in a lot of cases, we allow everybody else to define that for us, and we need to define it for ourselves. And then at the core of the model is what I call spirit. Some would say authentic self. I believe in bringing humanity into the workplace, because I don't think that's something we've done very well in the world in the past. And I believe that the generations coming in now, I hope, aren't going to settle for what my generation, the baby boomers, did settle for over time. We got worn down. So again, it's vocation, relationships, finances, well-being, and spirit, with you being the core of it. Mike talked about belonging. It's about finding that workplace where you can thrive and you feel like you belong there, because you sure know when you don't belong there.
Earlier this year, Aaron Dignan published a book called Brave New Work. And the thesis of the book is really quite simple and striking. We have innovated so many areas of our life: healthcare, environmental, tech, you know, all these things that touch our daily lives. We've gotten so much better at them. And the one thing that we are still doing the way we did it in the 19th century is organizations.
Yes.
The org chart has not changed. We have rockets that can land themselves, but that hierarchical structure and all the things that come with that. I mean, bureaucracy in and of itself is a neutral phenomenon. It's where there are roles and rules, and that's what defines a bureaucracy. The cultures and power relations that, you know, for better and often for worse, get perpetuated in these environments have gotten out of hand.
Yes.
And there's a lot of fresh thinking that's coming out now about how can we work differently. Lori, you bring your own unique perspective to this, as you alluded a few minutes ago, 20 years of small business, 20 years of large business. What in that journey, walk us through that a little bit more and tell us what insights or realizations got you to where you are now, where something like spirit is such a core part of your model.
Yeah. I started as a bank teller way, way, way back in 1978 in a savings and loan. And I spent the first 20 years of my career in savings and loans in the Philadelphia area. I happened to have been at one that was went under and got taken over by the government. And that was my defining moment. I was raised by, I like to call them sturdy German people, who said, get a job and stay there for 40 years. And that's the key to it. And that's what my dad did with the railroad. But in 1993, I had my entrepreneur awakening. I didn't actually live it out until 2015, 22 years later, because life got in the way. But that was my moment as I was sitting there waiting to get taken over and to find out what my fate would be. I did escape it and make my own fate. That's how I roll. But at that point, I couldn't see it. And I thought, there has to be a way to treat people right and make a profit, because I've either seen all profit or all people. And there has to be a way to balance that. And hey, I'm a one-person training department. And that defining moment of working at that organization as it went under, we were one of the larger ones at about 250 people. There were so many small ones, and we brought them in to, and I did a lot of work with them. That's where I learned to write resumes. That's where I learned to do all the work I do today. So my awakening was then. And I think my spiritual awakening happened when I moved to one of those larger organizations and started doing full-time leadership development training. And realized that I was on this spiritual, for me, not religious, but spiritual journey of finding myself post-divorce in my 40s, that time of life when it tends to happen. And I thought, what if we could just be ourselves at work? Wouldn't that be awesome? Because I had, coming in when I did, was one of the few women in the workplace and one of the few women who tracked upwards and fought the system all the way. And it was grueling. And you learn to think and be and act and dress like a man, because that was what you did to survive it. And so I wanted to have people not have the same experience I did, to create this better place. And so that's what really drove me into this work. But it was really that 1992, 1993 timeframe when it sort of, it was a cataclysm that came together, and you know, the marriage was ending, the career was crumbling. I didn't have a degree yet, because like Mike, I took advantage of tuition reimbursement eventually, but it got me into college so that I could, again, create my own path. And that's what I try to help people do.
You know, that's, as a student of human culture and history, that's a fascinating period of time in the United States. The early 90s, you know, the Berlin Wall, the Soviet Empire has crumbled and withdrawn. Our new international, the New World Order, as it was being called at the time, is being tested by Iraq's invasion of Kuwait and then by conflicts in Bosnia and in the former Soviet republics. And so there's this heady sense that the United States is the world's only superpower. And yet at the same time, we're now in a whole different world. We're not equipped for in our foreign policy, in our structures, in our education. So there really is a game-changing shift at that time. It doesn't show up necessarily in the workplace. People are not throwing the rule books out the window. We continue on as we do. But it gets to a point where the conversation has to change. One of the things you've both talked about is that the human beings that work for businesses, large or small, are human beings 24 hours a day, and that they're at work for a significant part of their life. But there's a sense now that supporting them in who they are at work and outside of work, and really the whole human approach to this, is critical. Mike, was that when that realization became more normal? Was that something that you personally embraced, or was that foreign at the time, coming as you did from a somewhat more rugged environment, working in these remote locations? I mean, mining is not the leading edge of spiritual business in anybody's sense of the things, and yet the same human beings with the same family goals and aspirations, the same political and religious commitments are trying to do hopefully good work in that environment. What was your personal, as this evolving paradigm shift, which we're still in the middle of, we haven't arrived yet, what was that like for you personally?
Well, I can identify with Lori and some of the feelings that she had back in the day. And one thing that you said, Lori, that really struck me is this balancing of work and life.
Yes.
And one of the things that really has me engaged with Insperity more than ever is Insperity truly believes that employees need to have that work-life balance. And some of the things that we've done recently is we've empowered our employees to be able to work remotely. And so you don't have to go into the office every day to a brick-and-mortar shop. And their life is easier. Their commuting time decreases. Their cost of commute goes away on those days. And they tend to work longer and work harder.
True.
Because they don't have any distractions from the office environment. So those are things that we've embraced. Personally, I've embraced those as well. And going back to that feeling of belonging and feeling like, you know, this company values me as an individual, it sure makes a lot. It's a lot of capital involved in helping people feel that way.
You know, it's not more than 40, 50 years ago when the standard paradigm, sort of the IBM company man was a man for the most part.
Right.
And the idea that, you know, your participation in the culture was defined by the dress code and by the walls of the building. And, you know, even outside sales reps and kind of the good old days or bad old days, depending on your point of view, were having to embody a very kind of prescriptive way of speaking, of conducting themselves. And of course, then there's all the bad behavior that, you know, that can happen in any environment. But certainly things have changed. Hmm. The embracing of, you know, this more flexible schedule of remote work, of co-working locations where maybe you work in the main office, or maybe you work from home a couple days a week, but then you go to a co-working space where you're part of a totally different community and you might be an executive for a very large company, but a day a week or 2 days a week, you're sitting in, you know, here locally, you're in HeraHub or, you know, Galvanize or any of these, because it plugs you into an ecosystem outside of your organization. You're still doing your work, but you're getting fresh insights and you're rubbing shoulders with people who are dealing mm-hmm. with different problems. This changes the traditional view of HR policies, employee handbooks, benefits, timesheets, you know, all the ways we used to try to control people's time and capture and extract their value. That's the old-fashioned Marxist in me talking. The ways in which we used to try to extract use value from employees has changed a lot. How does Insperity respond with 21st century HR services? What does it look like now in, you know, payroll and human capital management and time and attendance and, you know, recruiting and screening and expenses and all the sharp end of that stick touches all these little lives? How do you adapt to the changing context?
Well, it's a balance because, you know, we're in an ever-changing regulatory environment. And particularly when it comes to HR practices and procedures, we have several states adopting very rigid paid sick rules and very rigid rules around work and behavior at work, which, you know, obviously we want to make sure that we support ideas that improve the work culture. So we still have a rules-based system because that's the environment in which we operate. So we have to comply. So one of the services we provide our clients is to make sure that they can operate within that compliance framework and still have enough flexibility to do what they do best, and that's focus on their business. So we let them take the time to work on their business, get their business growing faster and making more money so we can address those payroll issues, those HR issues, we can address them. Now, we'll coach them on how to deal with them on the front lines because we're not out there with them when they are working with their employees. But we certainly give them the tools to be able to manage their workforce successfully.
Let's talk about benefits for a minute. That's another important part of the equation we haven't really dug too much into. People's expectations around the kinds of benefits that should accompany their position have also changed. What are some of the trends, or what are some of the what's hot in the world of benefits beyond kind of your basic traditional categories?
We've seen a lot of things that clients want to offer, and we're able to accommodate those and work with them on those things. What's unique about Insperity in terms of benefits is since we when we partner with the client in our workforce optimization model, we become a co-employer with that client. So their employees become our employees, and we're able to take that pool of employees and use that pool of employees, a large pool of employees, to get really good rates and competitive rates with our carriers. So what's cool about Insperity is that a small business can still act like a small business but offer big company benefits. Now, in terms of some of the trends we're seeing, we're seeing a lot of clients that are talking to us about offering unlimited PTO, expanded flexible PTO, flexible work hours, in addition to those traditional medical benefits that we all have to have. Those unique benefit offerings come with our own set of problems, but not so much that we can't work through them as an organization. We've dealt with them before.
For sure. Now, I knew there would be some interesting similarities and differences that would emerge in this conversation. Two HR experts, people experts, deeply ingrained in what it takes to make an organization flourish by having the people flourish. And you've just touched on one, Mike, that I want to explore just a little bit because I think this is important distinction to make. So this workforce optimization model is a unique solution. What kinds of businesses is that a good fit for?
If a business is in a situation where they realize that they need help, they can't do payroll themselves, they can't manage their benefit package themselves, they need help with the compliance in the world today, they need help with basic HR services, that's a client that's ready for us.
Is there a size of organization that makes sense here, or is it really kind of numbers agnostic on the—
Pretty much numbers agnostic. We have clients that are 3-4 people, and we have clients that are in the thousands. So we can support every range. And, you know, no matter how big a client is, we have a solution for them.
This idea of being a co-employer.
Yes.
For some business owners, they might be confused what that means. Are they giving up something? Are they giving up some of their autonomy if their people are also your people? How does that play out in real life?
The employer has the right to direct their workforce, and we don't take that away. We don't take anything away. What we do is in our partnership, we offer their employees a better deal when it comes to benefits and support. 401k, just a multitude, leave and disability, there's a multitude of benefits, life insurance, et cetera. So what it does really, it allows that employer to focus on their business and their niche in that in the world and get better at that. So we can help them with their employees and their employees become better. So it's we don't take anything away from the employers in terms of how they can control and manage their employees. We just help them do it better.
I think that's such an important idea that somebody who's out there struggling, feeling overwhelmed, maybe they currently have service providers or vendors who do things, they're spread around, you know, one person's handling, if they're outsourcing things, right? They might have a payroll provider that's working with them on that. They might have another that's working on benefits. They might have something else. And so to bring that all together and to have that taken off their plate must be a compelling value proposition.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Lori, you are in another form of partnership with leaders of organizations who really realize they need some support in developing their people and really taking the, in some cases, I would imagine, uncovering some of the commitments and values of that organization and really getting it communicated. You work with a lot of different types of groups. Can you give us a sense of the kind of spectrum of what your clients, where they fall?
Yeah, as far as industries go, we've worked with everything from wholesale lumber to nonprofit to investment banks. So it really runs the gamut. Something that always happens, and it always happened when I was in the larger organizations, everybody thinks they're unique, and they are. But when it comes to leadership, there's some basic stuff that needs to happen and basic ways that you treat people. It might look different in one culture than it does in another. And that has to be taken into account. But there's a core of foundational knowledge or content there that we work off of. And so it's just kind of interesting when you cross industries. I speak at a lot of different conferences. And this year I've spoken at investment banking, cybersecurity, field service. And I'm trying to think there's another one too, but it's not coming to me right now. And that's pretty diverse. But they're struggling with some of the same issues. They're struggling with, you know, we talked about attracting and retaining. So that's oftentimes the topic of my talk. How do you attract and retain the right people? And the other things that come up all the time are often about AI and machine learning and the Internet of Things, and that crosses all industries. And then when you get down to it and I start talking about these basics, people come back and say, yes, that. And by the way, I need to train my people on soft skills. And I've started calling them essential skills because I think soft skills really demeans what it is. But it's how do we connect with each other? And that's still a necessity out there in the world, even though we have growing AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning, all those things that are coming in that I hear over and over and over again. We've still got the humans out there.
So I'm really glad you brought this up because in the world of tech and innovation and disruption, that this is a foregone conclusion. If something is policy-based and rule-driven and the answer exists in written form somewhere, then a machine learning, AI-driven kind of bot is absolutely going to replace the people who have been, well, let me look that up for you and kind of getting back to you on that. So there's an entire chunk of HR services that's going to go away for humans because it's going to be handled better by the computers with less mistakes, with more context and nuance. I mean, this is not exactly what we're talking about, but I just watched a video the other day, a short clip of a robot that is unbeatable at playing rock, paper, scissors, you know, the game with the fist, right? And the reason it's unbeatable, so it was a robot hand, so it could actually make the little shapes, right? So high-speed servos driving this, you know, machinery and high-speed cameras that can interpret the muscle movements of your hand faster than you can see it with your eye. And there was literally no way to beat the robot, because as you start to move your hand into the shape, it would immediately know you're going for a fist, you're going for the scissors, you're
That's
going
amazing.
For the flat, and it would beat you every single time. So the fact that a robot can beat us in rock, paper, scissors means it can beat us at looking up policies and procedures, you know, in a database of language. So then the question becomes, now what? Like, that's a foregone conclusion at some point. Maybe it hasn't happened yet, but it's essentially here, right? So where the uniqueness comes in is in those contextual capabilities that people have that everyone is at some level native in, but not everyone has really developed themselves. What kinds of offerings are you providing? We got a clear sense of Insperity's workforce optimization solution and what it looks like to partner with them on that side of the equation. When somebody brings Lori and Aligned at Work into their workplace, what sorts of services and what sorts of packages are you offering them?
We specialize in leadership training. However, with the folks I have on my team, we can be somebody's full service training provider. We can go from, okay, how do you do functional training? I used to be a leader of that and do it in my corporate roles. And I know people who are really good at that sort of thing. And we've got instructional designers that we call upon, things like that. So we can build anything from functional training to customer service to sales to leadership. We generally lead with leadership because people can see the financial hit of bad leadership. You can spot that. And it comes out in turnover and lawsuits and all those kinds of things. But yeah, a lot of times people want to know, can we do communication training for them? Can we do different things? And we can do all of that. We also believe that we want to make sure you are creating culture the way you want the culture to be. So Mike covered a lot of that, so I won't really repeat that, but we do some of those same things, and we've got access to a number of assessments and things that will give you the organization's DNA. And we build on metrics and go from there. We believe in the intersection of metrics and humans. We believe in the intersection of AI and machine and humans, because that's the future.
It's the future that's already here in many ways. We just don't realize it. The increasing prevalence of voice interfaces, I don't remember the exact numbers, but something upwards of 30% of searches on Google are now done with voice only, with not typing onto the keypad on your phone or on a keyboard. And that's only going to continue. And as smart speakers and other voice interfaces end up around us, it just takes friction out of the way we access information, the way we intersect with others. What kind of leader recognizes the need for leadership development? That's a particularly enlightened kind of a human being.
Yeah.
What qualities do they see? The folks that bring you in, that recognize a need for this, what do they have in common?
I would say that they either have a background where they benefited from it, or they had an executive coach or a leadership coach and they benefited from it. So if they've had an experience with it, they will generally support it. For those that have never had any experience, usually they're just frustrated with all these people problems. And my experience says that when you get promoted from individual contributor to leader, within about 6 months, someone will push all of your buttons and you'll find yourself in HR going, what just happened there? It happens to almost everybody. Within this 6 to 9 month period, somebody pushes the thing. And then they just go like, there has to be an answer to this. I don't know what it is. And I find that too with diversity. Not everybody's been exposed to diversity and inclusion and things, but you can start the conversation with them.
This is an important segue to something I wanted to talk about, which is the increasing demand and pressure to do the right thing in having organizations be more reflective of the diversity of the communities in which they are operating. Certainly in my own background in higher education, this is something that really came over the last maybe 10 years, maybe 15 years, became one of the two most talked about topics, which is access. How do we have the student body reflective of the urban environment in which many of these universities are located? Because it didn't look, you know, there was a very sharp distinction in both, you know, ethnic, racial, class, you know, any axis of difference, you would find that the universities were not reflective of their immediate environments, pretty much anywhere in the world, but certainly in the urban United States. And so access, providing opportunities for those non-traditional, which is a kind of silly way of talking about it. But anyway, other than what had been normative,
yes,
students. And then the other one, of course, was retention. How do we help these people succeed in higher education? How do we help them get the degree that they may be the first person in their family for any number of reasons, either because they were immigrants or because they were from, you know, working class families? How do we help them succeed in that environment? Those topics are, of course, important in the workforce as well. And of course, they are talked about. They're not ignored. But they raise some thorny challenges at the level, not just of organizational leadership and individual team leads kind of wrapping their heads around how to be and act differently. Because of course, when you've got a student body, and I'm going to make the parallel here, when you've got a student body at the university that doesn't look like the students the professor grew up teaching,
right?
The nature of pedagogy, the nature of teaching has to change as well, because you can't take for granted some of the things you had taken for granted just to be kind of ridiculous about it. You know, for example, there was a time when everybody in a liberal arts program had studied Greek and Latin in some ridiculous, very privileged white high school somewhere. Right. That's not the case anymore. So the nature of the curriculum has changed. The nature of teaching has changed. What's changing in companies now that this need to be more inclusive, which starts with diversity, of course, the mere fact of folks being present, but then inclusion is more than just them being there. Inclusion goes straight into culture. Are they able to influence and lead effectively? What's the state of the game, Mike, on diversity and then inclusion in the workplace today? What do we need to do differently?
I think first recognizing that we're all equal in that regard also, but providing everyone an opportunity to succeed and grow. And one of the things that we offer, and it was interesting, Lori, when you talked about leadership development, what kind of a leader recognizes that they need leadership training. Like another one is that what they're doing isn't working.
Right.
And they need an intervention.
Right.
One thing that Insperity does offer its clients as well as our employees is we have online training available, because the access that you spoke of earlier, Adrian, is key. The folks have to have access to higher learning. And so on our platform, they can access it through self-paced courses. They can schedule through our virtual learning center instructor-led courses online and schedule that for varying programs. And we also offer an in-person, similar to what you provide, is that we call it a performance specialist that actually go in and do leadership development and diversity and inclusion training for our clients. Discrimination, harassment, prevention training, things like that. But what we do is we want to assess the client's needs first and make sure that we have a prescription for them after, you know, a diagnosis. So that's kind of in a nutshell how we manage through that.
Lori, the difference between equity and equality as rhetoric and equity and equality as reality is a huge gap.
Yes.
How do you engage in these topics and what are you seeing in your work?
I think since I tend to work with more smaller organizations than larger ones. So let me back up for a second. In my corporate experience, when I was in the large organizations, they have a well-defined diversity, inclusion type of initiative and programs and things like that. And you get a lot of unconscious bias training and all of that. The companies that we tend to work with at Aligned at Work don't have those kind of resources. We're generally brought in when they're about 100 employees up to maybe 1,000 employees. Larger than that, they probably have leadership development people or OD people on staff. Under that, they know they need it, but they just can't free up money to do and resources to do something like that, or they'll do it in bits and pieces. So equality and equity, those are conversations that we're having a lot these days in the D&I world. I will say that oftentimes when I go in and speak to leaders in these organizations, I might be the first person that's ever brought this up to them. I might be the first person who's ever said the terms white privilege or my experience working with the American Indian community has opened my eyes to many things. My experience of talking to my Black or African American women friends or colleagues about just because we're women doesn't mean we're having the same experience. And I saw that play out. So I oftentimes look at myself as that person that, you know, when you've got a jar lid that's stuck and you twist and you twist and you twist and you can't get it off and then you hand it to somebody else and they go, boom. Well, I think I'm the person that begins to twist and twist and twist oftentimes and plant the first seeds of what is equality, what is equity, what is diversity, what is inclusion, and holy cow, they've added belonging to this thing. What is that all about? And so I believe that, you know, at Line to Work, we want people to understand those things and to create a place where people feel like they belong, so they feel like they thrive when they leave, if they leave the house or sign on every day.
Yeah, belonging is an interesting one because it goes outside of quotas, which is where the conversations about diversity are often start,
yes,
and of course, woefully insufficient for it to end there, and moves to that very personal sense of an experience and an identity being linked,
yes,
to the organization.
Yes.
So how do you get there?
You know, I'll give you an example of a time when I felt I truly belonged and I really valued what this boss brought to me. I worked for this younger guy. He's now off running major parts of Comcast. But I ran into him kind of mid-career. And I had met my, at that time, fiance, who we were going to get married that year. It was 2002. And my fiance suddenly found himself having chest pains and upon exertion, and he was a nuclear medicine technologist and he knew what that meant. And so he got himself into a doctor and we suddenly found ourselves not in angioplasty, but in triple bypass territory. And my boss said to me, take what time, because I said, I thought it was just going to be a couple of days and here we are. And he said, and I'm like, and I have my PTO booked otherwise. And, you know, I'm getting married later this year and all this. So I'm kind of in a little bit of a panic for time off. And he said, you know, all week long, your team has been picking up the slack. I know you log on at night and you clear your emails out. Just keep doing what you're doing. Don't log the time. And that was totally against the rules of that organization at the time. And I felt such loyalty to him. And we had other conversations where I'd be stewing about something that was happening in corporate and he would just kind of put perspective around it. And that to me is a person I want to work for. I felt like I belonged, if not in that organization, ultimately working for him. Yeah, I would have worked for him anytime, any place.
Thank you. I have an example of that personally too. In fact, it occurred this year or late last year. I had a family emergency come up right around the holidays, Christmas holidays, and I was out of PTO and I had to be there. And so I talked to my boss. She says, you go do what you need to do. We'll manage. And one of the cool things about Insperity is as long as we got an internet connection, we can work anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I flew back to Southern Indiana, spent 4 weeks with my family back there, helped manage through that issue. Like you, I logged on every day. I checked emails. I was still contributing. And I flew back 4 weeks later and everything was great.
You know, the proof of culture really is when it's tested. It's not what's written down or developed in a training room or in an executive retreat. You know, that's not where culture lives.
Right.
Culture lives in the everyday interactions people have with each other and with the organization. And it's much like in society. So on this topic of white privilege, I think it's so important to raise and discuss and to deal with and to wrestle with and to grapple with and to really kind of get over ourselves collectively about this, because it's not personal. It's a system. It's a system that's had a thumb on the scale for some folks and not for others. And the only way we can change conversations is by changing the concrete circumstances in which people live and work. And that's being tested every day. We're constantly testing our environment to see, does it nurture us and support us or not? And so people in an organization where, you know, the leadership spouts a certain line, but they know if they make a request or even beyond making requests, the silent things we observe that are unsaid in the way things play out, Everybody's watching all the time. And our organizations are, you know, rising or falling on these, you know, success metrics of how they treat their people in the micro moments in everyday life. Mike, how do you get leaders and, you know, you might start working with a small business that comes to you and they just need a set of services that you provide. How do you broach the bigger issues here? How does Insperity get more of the mind share of your clients to bring some of these kinds of concepts to that partnership?
When we are meeting with a prospective client, one of the things we try to do is understand their needs. What keeps them up at night? You know, what is it? It's not so much about what they produce. It's how they produce it and how their people interact with each other. And so we will identify the needs, and it might not be the workforce optimization services that they need. Maybe they just need a payroll solution, or maybe they just need an expense reporting system. You know, we won't know until we just lay the cards on the table, open up and talk about what's going on in their business. So we're able to differentiate between, you know, what they need and what we can align what we have with what they need.
What sets Insperity apart? So there's lots of HR service providers out there in the world. Insperity, aside from having been around a long time, aside from having a very multifaceted full service set of solutions, what would you say is the difference that makes a difference between Insperity and your direct competition?
Three things: the depth of our service, the breadth of our service, and the level of care that we give to our clients. Those three things are unmatched. We have so many offerings that we can offer a client. And a good example is the commercial where you have one person standing there saying, "I'm Sprint," I think it was a commercial back then, and 2,000 people behind that individual. That's us.
Depth is really important. You know, it's easy to focus on breadth. We've got, you know, a whole array of services and programs and things that we can help you with. It's that depth that I find most intriguing as you really do partner with your clients to help their people succeed. That must be a two-way street. What are you learning from clients in the process of partnering with them?
Oh, it's amazing what I've learned. It really just fascinates me that we have clients that do things that I'd never thought that, I mean, how could you make money doing that? But they do. And the service or the equipment or the technology they provide, I can't begin to describe all the vast array of resources that our clients have, not just with their intellectual property, but with their people, truly amazing people. So it'd be hard to say what one thing I've learned because there's so many. One of the things I've learned is that entrepreneurs are the key to driving this economy. Small business entrepreneurs, that's where it is. And it's exciting to be a partner with them in today's world.
Lori, a while ago you were speaking about promoting from within. And that must be an interesting observation and learning and supporting of these organizations as well, as they take people who are either established or who are rising fast and finding ways to get up underneath them and support not only the individual, but also the management, the leadership in making that process work. What are you learning from businesses and organizations in your engagement with them?
Well, you know, it's been interesting to go into different organizations and teach leadership, coming from my own experiences and things, because it's always different and there is no one right answer. And I think from both my clients, and I've been reading Brené Brown's Dare to Lead, and holy cow, that's the first book in a long time that I read where I would stop and say, I've got to think about what this means to me. And especially as a leader now in an organization that is run off of a lot of consultants who all have other things that they're doing, it's not like having a team at work that's dedicated just to you and whatever your piece of the organization is. It's a different way to lead. And then I look at the generations coming into the workplace and what the different expectations are. So I'm 63 years old. I feel like I'm just getting started in my own business. And I feel like I need to reexamine my own leadership over and over and over again, because as much as certain core principles stay the same, there's so many new things coming at us.
You know, I know from my own experience as a speaker and trainer who, you know, leading programs for thousands of people, often 150, 200 people at a time,
right,
in intensive, you know, 3-day trainings, you can't sleep on your own development.
Right.
In the process of doing this, you know, to be something like, without patting ourselves on the back too much, to be something like a Jedi, you know, sort of part diplomat, part warrior, part, you know, serving the greater revolution, if you will, to go into an environment, often alone, mm-hmm. where you're going to stand in front of these people and your ability to lose them yes. is much easier and quicker than your ability to keep them engaged, keep them thinking about themselves, really making sure that they are pulling the work toward them. What kinds of work do you do on yourself as a leader and trainer to be able to walk into those very diverse groups and make the difference you're committed to making?
I am always looking for what's the next big thing. So I do webinars to see if there's new information out there about the things that I do in leadership. I do, I hire coaches. I've got a great business coach that's responsible for her teachings are responsible for my business being successful. I have a guy in Tempe, Al, who I talk to every Monday about how I spent my hours and whether I'm getting the right results from what I'm doing. So it's everything from the metrics building and the business building stuff. And I hired Connie Kadansky, who's a local sales coach. I mean, I don't shy away from hiring experts to pick off the pieces that where I need some extra help or some extra lift, or I need a different perspective. And I go to a lot of conferences and things. Work Human is one of my favorite conferences ever. And I think, Adrian, we met at a conference initially here.
Yes.
So it's just a constant, I'm going off for a certification in a couple of weeks. There's always something you can do to keep yourself fresh.
Mike, how do you sharpen the saw in the classic Covey sense? How do you work on yourself so you can work better with clients and with your team?
I learn a lot from my team, actually. I have 8 folks that work for me. I have 3 specialists in Denver, 1 in San Jose, 1 in Walnut Creek, 2 in Brea, California, and 1 here in Phoenix. And each and every one of them are so valuable and so important to me. And so they're the ones that actually do the most interfacing with the clients. So they bring back to me what the clients are saying they need and the support that they need. So what that does, it helps me, you know, develop a very clear roadmap for how I can improve on my skill set, whether it be through online training or research or just spending time with them and the clients understanding their needs. So that's how I get better.
So, Mike, there's probably 2 groups of people that might be interested in connecting with you or connecting with Insperity. They're either people who are inspired and want to come work at a great place
yes.
to work, or they're business owners, business leaders who have been intrigued by your discussion about the workforce optimization solution, a variety of services. What would you say to those 2 distinct groups of folks, and how would they connect with you and with Insperity?
Okay. I have an email address. It's mike.bays@insperity.com. They can call me, or they can go online and look at insperity.com and play around with the website there and learn more. In terms of folks that would be interested in joining Insperity, same thing. Just reach out to me. We have a lot of, well, we grow mostly by employee references. So I know a person who knows a person who might be interested in this role, or if you ever get a role, please call me. We have, when we interview candidates for jobs in Insperity, we often get a pool of qualified candidates. And, you know, when we select a person for that role, the folks that weren't necessarily selected are back again when we post another position. So it's really interesting how it works.
Mike Bays, Manager of HR Services for Insperity. Thank you very much for joining us here in the studio today.
It's my pleasure.
Lori Battaglia from Aligned at Work. As someone listening to this conversation feels like a conversation with you about their team, about their needs, about their culture is the next step for them. What would you say to those people and how do they get in touch with you?
Definitely give me a call or email me. And you can reach me at Laurie@AlignedAtWork. And Laurie is spelled L-A-U-R-I-E at AlignedAtWork.com. They can find us online at AlignedAtWork.com. And then I'm all over LinkedIn. Last name is spelled B as in boy, A-T-T-A-G-L-I-A. And definitely get in touch with us. We've got a whole discovery process. We've got a way of working and we will guide you through it.
Marvelous. Lori Battaglia, CEO of Aligned at Work. Thank you for joining us here today too. For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.